Hello, everyone.
Hello.
It's KawaiiCast.
I'm Candace.
I'm Tyler.
And man, it feels like it's been so long since we recorded.
It really does.
We only took a week hiatus, but I think between the fact that we released the last episode a day late, and then Computer-kun got isekai'd into another reality.
Yeah, poor PC-kun.
Yeah. So we couldn't record last week. And it really only was 1 week, but it was just... It was a long week.
Yeah.
So, let's go ahead and get things started with our anime news segment.
Anime news! Starting off with the big news. Konosuba Season 3 announced.
And the spin-off
Megumin
series.
The spin-off series
got
an adaptation.
That's all I was gonna say. That's all I got.
Oh. Well, in other news, out in London, there was a Crunchyroll mural that was erected in Shoreditch. I probably pronounced that wrong because I don't know British names.
Yeah. You gotta say it with an accent to pronounce it.
Yeah, that's not happening. so the mural was put up in to promote the company's anime titles, specifically the currently airing season. So I don't know if it'll be repainted over for the next season or anything, but it's there.
Yeah. Sorry, Podcat is going nuts.
He's nuts. He's hyper.
But yeah, so...
Other than that, I got no news.
Yeah, I feel like I had things, and then PC-kun was just like, bye, and yeah, then I forgot everything.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I know we've been watching a lot of anime this season, but,
We have.
Yeah,
and, you
we haven't
know,
really
it's,
had anything to talk
it's,
about.
It's actually really funny, because, like... We've both been like, oh yeah, we're watching a lot. And then you mentioned this week, you're like, hey, let's watch this this show on Netflix. And I was like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah. Well,
I bring up Netflix, and it's like, oh, by the way, Komi-san is playing. And I'm like, fuck, there's 5 more episodes I need to watch.
Yeah, so kind of what made me want to do this episode was my friend on Twitter, Moe, who I've mentioned before because of their fabulous webcomic. They asked me if I had any recommendations for anime to watch this season. And I was drawing a complete blank. And I'm like, I'm watching so many things, I don't feel like I can recommend any of them. And then she told me she was watching this movie while her and I were talking, and I was like, okay, I knew that movie came out like a month ago, so I guess I should go watch that. So I told Tyler to go watch it. And getting into this movie, I had heard a lot of things about it. In particular, there were many things that I was worried about this film. But I'll get into that. So... The movie is Bubble. And we've had, you know, anthropomorphized animals as waifus. We've had anthropomorphized vehicles as waifus. We've had
anthropomorphized
guns as waifus. And now anime is asking us, what if a bubble were your waifu?
Yes.
And that is the premise of this show.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so let's talk about the bubble waifu.
She's cute.
She's cute.
I'll give them that. She's cute. She's very intrusive into other people's personal space bubbles.
Well, I mean, she doesn't have a personal space bubble.
She
because
is
she is a bubble.
Personal space bubble.
She is a personal space bubble, exactly. And yeah, there's already, because Wanna Hobby just passed,
yeah,
pretty recently, like last week, while we were away. And there's already a scale figure announced for her. They already have the prototype, And the Nendoroid for her has already been painted.
Really?
And should be releasing pretty soon.
Can you not?
He is so hyper right now.
Oh my god.
He just wants to be in the way. So let's get into some of my concerns before we get too into the plot with this, because when this trailer first dropped at the beginning of the year, I remember a lot of people talking about, like, how they felt the one scene from the trailer had a higher animation budget than the entire series of Seven Deadly Sins. And I agree with that. But the thing that stemmed the fear from this was the fact that that's how I felt about the movie Fireworks. And as you guys know, if you guys have listened to this podcast at any given time that I'm talking about the movie Fireworks, that movie sucked.
Wasn't great.
One of the biggest issues I had with it was that they showed all of the pretty Sakuga scenes in the trailer, and then every other scene in the movie that we didn't see in the trailer, they forgot to animate. So they would basically show us 2 minutes of a still train image that wasn't animated while two characters had an entire conversation to that shot. We didn't even see the characters talking. And that was like, okay, I guess that explains why they had such a good budget for the Sakuga, because they only animated the Sakuga scenes.
Yeah.
But Bubble, fortunately, did not do that. Consistently, the show is animated well. There are scenes that are definitely, like, the high-polished, look-how-cool-this-is sequences. But even during the more mundane scenes, the attention to detail and the character animation and just everything about it is still extremely beautiful and appealing to look at. I feel like they never really cut corners with this movie, and if they did, it wasn't very noticeable. So that brings me to my second fear, and this started coming from when people actually started talking about the movie, and I started seeing a bit of, like, fan reviews online, and this was a lot of people talking about how this movie has basically two story threads happening simultaneously, and the last time we trusted a Netflix anime with two storylines happening simultaneously was Yosuke. Which, if you guys have ever heard us talk about Yosuke, was our biggest problem with the show.
Yeah.
Is that it very, very much felt like the studio had pitched two different shows to the network, or Netflix in this case, and Netflix literally said make
okay,
it one show.
Combine them.
Yeah. We're not giving you the budget for two shows, literally make one show with both of those ideas. And that was another one of my fears going into Bubble, was that these two ideas would just constantly be clashing with each other for center stage, basically. But fortunately, to my surprise, I feel like both storylines were pretty well intertwined, and they weren't perfect by any means, but they were threaded together pretty nicely by both of the protagonists of this show. So I really don't feel like any of my fears were quite well-founded with this movie, and I was surprised how well-polished it was. I don't think it's a perfect movie by any means, but I will say if you're hesitant to watch this movie because of the same fears that I had, just go into it.
Do you believe there are any perfect movies? I mean, you know, aside from Emperor's New Groove. That one doesn't count.
That one is a perfect movie. I do think there's anime movies that I could call perfect. I genuinely think things like Promare are perfect. I think A Silent Voice was a perfect movie. And I think to a certain degree Your Name was a perfect movie. I would even argue that Mugen Train was a perfect movie. May have been one of the best adaptations of a manga to an anime film possible. Same with Jujutsu Kaisen Zero. Like, I think while I can point out, like, minor flaws in all of those things, I do think that they set out to do what they wanted to do and accomplished those things. I don't know if Bubble quite did that, but I do think a lot of the ratings I've seen for it, like, from professional, like, rating sites or whatever, kind of hit a little bit closer to the mark. I think it's hitting a 7.5 on my anime list and like an 80% on IMDb. And it currently has a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I do think it is better than that. So with that, kind of setting aside the fears that people might have going into this movie, just remember it's on Netflix, and if you're not borrowing Netflix from somebody at this point, you're paying Netflix for something that's not worth it. Who pays for Netflix at this point?
Not I.
We're definitely never getting sponsored by Netflix.
Nope.
But yeah, if you already had Netflix for any other reason, you may as well check out this film. Is kind of the point I'm getting across here. But let's go ahead and get into what this movie is actually about.
It doesn't make it any amount of subtle that it's literally just The Little Mermaid.
It is The Little Mermaid.
That's it. It's The Little Mermaid. Bubble Girl falls in love with boy.
It is The Little Mermaid with parkour. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. I forgot the parkour.
The Little Parkour Mermaid. So, when this movie trailer first hit, a lot of people pointed out that this was, in fact, going to be a parkour anime set place in a post-apocalyptic Tokyo where gravity doesn't seem to work normally, which adds to the whole parkour effect.
Which is... It's kind of neat, and it's kind of amusing that, like, it's literally only Tokyo that is, you know, post-apocalyptic. Like,
yeah.
Everywhere else is just like, oh, yeah, everything's going same shit as always, you know? Yeah. Like, it's just, it's normal. But then inside Tokyo, it's a bubble.
Yeah.
There's a bubble surrounding Tokyo. Water has risen, you know, buildings are falling apart, and
I really kind of like
gravity is all out of whack.
Yeah, I really like the whole concept of a self-contained apocalypse in a small area.
Yeah.
It literally contained itself. Like, this wasn't a man-made containment. In fact, when people did try to stop people from going into Tokyo because of this rare phenomenon, basically orphans were just like, nah, we're just gonna go there and do parkour and shit.
Fuck that noise, I'm gonna go be a parkour star.
Yeah. And people even started like making YouTube videos and stuff like that of these basically death matches. I forget what it's called, like par sports or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Deathcore, that's what they called it. Deathcore. Yeah.
Which is absolutely hilarious because, like, they take every measure to make sure that nobody actually dies.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, yeah, this is terrible. If you fall in the water, you're out. And if you fall in the water over in that swirling vortex of doom, you're probably dead. But don't worry, we have the lifeguards over here. They'll save you.
It's about as extreme as extreme sports, where it's like, they're like, this is extreme sports! Anything could happen!
And everyone is wearing elbow pads and knee pads and a helmet.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah. Safety first, okay? Monster energy drink! Yeah, that's basically the vibe that you get from
Radical!
I think my favorite is, like, the very beginning, one of the guys who's, like, kind of explaining the whole deathcore thing for the audience is, like, obsessed with, like, one of those, like, little, like, doll things that have scents in them.
Yeah, he's obsessed with, like, his little scented plush or whatever. Like, he's always sniffing it.
So, and that brings me to my first real problem with this show, and that's how they handle exposition. There are so many scenes in this movie that are just exposition dump. One was handled really well, and that is in the, basically the second scene, where the character Makoto is basically explaining why Tokyo is now a city full of water and bubbles, and why gravity doesn't work. She's telling the story of the entire, like, contained apocalypse in Japan. And she's specifically telling the audience that, so she's doing it from a very narrator perspective. That was fine. My issue with this is that a lot of the other exposition scenes is, like, the very opening scene where we're learning about the Death Corps, and we're explained to it by this guy that's obsessed with the scented doll, because some other guy is like, hey, yo, so I don't really fully understand what this Death Corps thing is. Can y'all explain it to me? Hardcore Monster Energy drink. And everybody was like...
Today's episode of Kawaii Cast has not been sponsored by Monster Energy Drink.
But yeah, then everybody's like, what, newbie? You don't know about Death Corps? Well, let me sit down and settle it for you. Grab a Monster Energy drink and we'll fucking talk about it. And then they explain the entire premise of Death Corps to the audience. And
there's like, there's a singular flag at a random location inside Tokyo, and the goal is for one of the members of the two teams of five people to reach that flag.
Yeah.
Whoever gets there first wins, but don't fall in the vortex of death.
Yo. And they're just like, wow, that sounds really dangerous, punks. And they're just...
You bet your ass it is. Sniff my scented plushie.
But it's keeping Tokyo a good place to live. It's like... The exposition in this movie is fucking awful.
It's so bad.
No one has told these writers about the show don't tell rule. Like... There's even another scene later where, like, I guess the main, like, coach of the main team that we're supposed to be following, Makoto, the, like, kind of one of the team sponsors, asks him...
So, from my understanding, is she's there as a scientist. She's supposed to be studying...
She's researching the bubbles.
Is researching the bubbles and the weird gravity fluxes inside and all
sorts of...
Yeah,
but she's kind of become the team mom, basically.
Yeah.
And so the team dad, like the main coach of their team, she's like, hey, didn't you used to do parkour? Why don't you do it anymore? And he's like, well, because of this.
You bet your ass I used to do parkour, but not since Nam.
Yeah, not since I lost my leg in the incident. And she's like, the incident? You mean the one at the location that's going to be really relevant in the movie later? And he's like, yeah, that incident at that location that's going to be really relevant in the movie later. Whereas also the main character of this movie also had an incident, which is why we have this connection. And she's like, oh my god, that must be very important for us to know later in this movie.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, like the exposition of this movie is garbage. They just dump information on you and they act like they've never met each other before. Like, she's like supposed to be like the team mom of this community who's been living with them for a couple of years now. She never once thought to ask why he has a metal leg.
Right?
Like, you know, it's just... Actually, like, by the way, the main character of this movie is hearing weird phenomenon happening at the weird location that we were just talking about. Clearly, that must be relevant. Like, it's so bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So that is really my definitive complaint about this movie, is that... Story-wise, it's pretty dull, I'm not gonna lie. Even the Little Mermaid thing, like, Makoto's kind of going through all of her books, and the Bubble Girl is just like, what about this one? And it's just so happens to be the Little Mermaid, and Makoto's like, oh, but that story's really sad.
That one's sad, you don't want to hear that.
But I guess I'll read it to you anyway.
Right? Yeah, it's... There's a lot of weird things about this movie. Like, normally a movie doesn't get, like, an opening sequence like an anime does.
Okay, I was actually gonna...
But this one does!
I was gonna talk about that, actually, because it seems like it's becoming an industry standard. Because Your Name did that. They had an opening sequence, which was done by the Rand Wimps. And then, because of that, Weathering With You also got an opening sequence done by the Rand Wimps. And then Josie the Tiger and the Shark got an opening done by Eve. And then this movie got an opening sequence done by Eve.
This opening sequence is so weird.
It's literally just like a compilation of like scenes and clips from the movie, which is what Josie the Tiger and the Shark did.
Yeah, but this one, I swear to God, they made it out to be like, so at the beginning of the movie, like I said, they don't make it subtle that this is the Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And then they break into this opening that is like straight up out of a shonen anime. And I don't know about you, but I wouldn't consider The Little Mermaid shonen, okay?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's Eve. It's literally Eve. Like, it's the band Eve. I think every single major anime studio that's making films now is like, it is literally impossible for us to create anything with good animation unless Eve is somehow involved. Because Jujutsu Kaisen has now set that standard for all anime, is that if you're not playing your beautiful animation Eve, what are you even doing?
I guess.
Yeah, so like I said, Jujutsu Kaisen did it, Jujutsu Kaisen Zero did it, Josie the Tiger and the Shark did it, and now Bubble did it. All of them have used Eve for their opening sequence.
The opening sequence did not set the tone for the entire movie either, though. Like I said, it's entirely a shonen OP. It's not The Little Mermaid OP.
Yeah. Speaking of which, on the whole subject of Eve, when we meet the Bubble Girl, she doesn't really talk, and obviously she doesn't have a name. And because of that, the main character decides to name her Uta, after a popular idol in Japan. Uta also sang the opening song.
Of course.
So yeah, that's a fun little Easter egg. And also, I believe the girl on the side of the train whose image like inspired Uta's design is actually Uta.
Yeah.
So the character design is very heavily inspired by the actual idol. So that's a really fun Easter egg.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah. So in terms of what we like about this movie, because I don't just want to sit here and bash on this for an entire hour of this podcast, because I reserve that kind of stuff for stuff like Fireworks, which really deserved an hour of being bashed. I do think this one deserved its 7.5 out of 10 rating, because I think that it has a lot of these problems, particularly with dialogue and exposition. But I do think this movie has a lot of promise, and a lot of that did start with the opening for me. I know that for you, that opening set you off on the wrong foot, but for me as a major fan of Eve's YouTube channel, and I enjoy watching a lot of their music videos, and I think if you guys aren't following Eve on YouTube, please do yourself a favor and go do so, because all of their music videos are fantastic. This movie really did feel like an hour and a half long Eve music video. It feels like it started off as the premise that somebody just wanted to pitch this idea as a music video to Eve for that song, and then they just decided to make a movie out of it. And I think you could easily feel the urge to make a full movie out of any of their music videos, and it makes a lot of sense. But because of that, the actual plot gets a little bit lost. But as I mentioned, this is...
The plot relies heavily on the exposition dumps.
Yeah. And that is very, very problematic, because most shows should strive for the whole show-don't-tell concept of writing. This is very, very tell-don't-show. This is tell while we flash beautiful animation in your face. And it makes it a little bit better to just watch it without the sound. A little bit. Like, the character dialogues are really, really cheesy. I did watch this movie in English with the subtitles.
I did too.
Yeah. And I don't know if this would have been better to watch in Japanese, but a lot of the lines were pretty cheesy. And watching it with the subtitles, it seems like the translations were pretty close to the original, so I don't really know if watching this in Japanese would have saved it any.
Yeah.
But I will say, if you're worried about cheesy dialogue, maybe go watch it in Japanese, because at least then you can't tell how cheesy it is. In English, it really does sound cheesy. But that brings me to my first 2 points of what this movie does right. One is the visuals, because, oh my god, this movie is gorgeous. Its character designs are very, very likable. The backgrounds are beautiful. The character animation is beautiful. The camera work is fantastic. It has great direction, great movement, great animation. I really can't think of anything visually that this movie does wrong, and I can see a lot of people wanting to cosplay the main character Uta from this because she's just one of those I'm not like other girl energy characters. And I think that's the best compliment I could give to her because she's just so likable.
Yeah, no, if I were to cosplay anything, it would be the, I guess you'd call them the antagonists?
The Undertakers?
The Undertakers?
Yeah.
They are cool, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I like them.
Yeah, their designs are very, very Eve, honestly. The one-eyed, scrawny characters in heels and black and purple color schemes.
Yeah.
Those are characters that show up in every single one of Eve's music videos, along with a half-destroyed city. So this is definitely an hour and a half long Eve music video. I love their concept. I love their designs. I love the Blue Blazes character designs. I even love the more, like, uptight teams that think that this is a genuine sporting event designs.
Like, what did they call themselves? The Lobsters?
Yeah, the Lobsters. There was also the team, like, the Ninjas or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, all of the teams are really well designed. My only issue is that the writing for these characters is a little bit subpar. I think the Blue Blazes in particular, who are supposed to be our main protagonist team, two of the team members I didn't even realize were on their team for the longest time. Like, it wasn't until the Undertaker match that I'm like, oh, those are Blue Blazes? I thought those were the Ninjas.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I got a little bit confused over who was on what team.
You're like, hold on here, what?
A lot of the characters really don't get a lot of background. A lot of them are kind of one-note characters. Like, the Captain of the Blue Blazes is just this guy who's completely full of himself and has a crush on Makoto. The one kid with dreads is an orphan and constantly reminds people that he's an orphan and thus he doesn't know any better, so he's a little bit cocky. And the other three characters on their team nobody knows about other than the main character, Hibiki, who has a very, very, very strong sense of hearing, and thus he always has to wear headphones, and he avoids his team like the plague because they're all a bunch of loudmouths. He's really only a part of this team because he guarantees their victory, as he is super good at parkour. Like, almost abnormally, supernaturally good at parkour.
Yeah, and they do mention that, you know, like, when the orphan kid, you know, tries to do a bubble hop, I guess. I don't know, he jumps off a building and tries to hop on a bubble to the next building or some shit, you know, and then, one of the other guys, you know, saves him. And yeah. He's like, oh, you can't do that. Only Hibiki can do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, be more careful, you know, like...
So I think the parkouring side of this story is interesting enough, but it doesn't really bring a whole lot to the story other than just, like, poor orphan kids whose parents were lost during the big bubble tragedy.
Which shall, from now on, be called the bubbling.
The bubbling, yeah. All of the parents that died in the bubbling left their kids behind, and their kids are now doing parkour just to get by. They, like, gamble, like, their precious supplies or whatever in order to live.
Right?
Yeah. But I think while the character writing lacks, the character designs are absolutely fantastic. I just think each character's a little bit of a one-note. And I could see people arguing that things like Promare also did this with the Fire Squad. But the difference between this and Promare is that Promare was very obviously written to be a comedy, and the one-note characteristics of each of the Fire Squad makes sense because we really only get to see those notes on those characters, and they absolutely stand out next to the loudmouth Gallo.
Well, that and with Promare, it was very much focused on Gallo and Leo. Like,
yeah,
you didn't really see much of the side characters.
Yeah, and again, their one-noteness was very essential for the fact that this was a comedy. And these characters were supposed to be extremely comedic. Not to mention that there is a minor subtle hint that these characters have spent so long basically just fighting for their lives against a terrorist organization that they really haven't had a lot of chances to just sit down and talk to each other about their personal lives. So they really only know each other by those one-note characteristics. Where Bubble, this team of the Blue Blazes, has literally been living together as a found family for a couple of years now, but they talk to each other like they've never met each other before. So there is a very distinct difference between a one-note character being somebody that you only see at work versus a one-note character who's somebody that you've been sharing a roof with for a good portion of your life. And I think that's where the character writing this feels a little bit lost. And so that's another one of my problems, but I still think everybody's pretty likable, I guess. I do like the antagonists of the Undertakers because their mysteriousness really does add a lot to their characters and their designs. And I thought the whole premise of them just kind of being assholes who are trying to get views on YouTube by being absolute mysterious assholes who just take by their just, sponsorships by just way
coming,
too far.
By just coming into this East, like, this par sports game with their sponsorships and fancy gear and drones and all sorts of camera equipment and just being like, yeah, this is us. Look at us go.
Yeah, these are like the Fortnite players of deathcore. And and I just loved them. Like, I don't feel like there's any fault in them not being well written because they really are just supposed to be one of those guys that open the camera like, yo, 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 everybody! Thank you for subscribing! Make sure you ring the bell and hit the notification button so you guys can be aware of next time we do this death game with some random people who's, like, Teen Mom we kidnapped.
Check it out, guys! It's our first kidnapping! Selfies!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what? That kind of shit.
The kind of people that would kind of do just about anything for views.
Yeah, who have, like, the YouTube thumbnails where their face is all, like, and, like, the weird duck face, like, the...
Yeah.
Yeah, the Markiplier expressions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, I really like the antagonists in this. But then that gets us to the intertwined story of the Little Mermaid storyline, which I do feel like could have been played a little bit more subtly, but I don't mind how in-your-face it was, because this really is a good adaptation of The Little Mermaid, in my opinion, doing a very modern post-apocalyptic take on a classic fairy tale. It doesn't feel like they're trying to mimic what Disney did, which is how a lot of things feel like when you get into, like, the Ghibli-style anime fairy tale adaptations. It just kind of feels like this is just Disney, but with anime eyes. Bubble doesn't. It feels like it's very, very unique take on the Hans Christian Andersen story, and a more accurate adaptation of it than the actual Little Mermaid Disney film.
Yeah.
Because the Disney film really toned down a lot of what the story meant. It was more of a whole, like, I love him and I'll do anything to be with him story, where the original was more about, like, finding your own happiness, even if it means sacrificing the things that are important to you. And that's very, very much what the story of this is. It did a good job blending in the parkour sub-story plot, but ultimately this is about Uta, who is a literal bubble from space, who finds a boy on Earth who can understand and hear her, and incidentally all of her sibling bubbles from space don't take kindly to this and cause an apocalypse. It's a very weird story.
They're just like, no, you can never be with him. You're from two different worlds.
And that's what The Little Mermaid was about, too. It was about a mermaid who saves a prince from drowning and wants to be with him, even though being with him is literally destroying her. But in order for her to find happiness and find the things that she enjoys, she has to be willing to sacrifice the things that are important to her. Which could be seen as a pretty toxic relationship, which might be why the Disney version went with a more happier ending, but...
Fuck the Disney version.
Yeah.
I want more sad endings. Give me more Wolf's Rain, okay?
Yeah.
Come on!
And that's really what this is that Uta doesn't really care too much about herself as she does just finding that piece of happiness in the life that she has. She doesn't need to live for a long time, she just wants to have a good time. And that's really where it ties in the parkour story into this so well, is that while you could see the parkour as kind of being a weird contrast to the Little Mermaid storyline, it really did just show how much she was enjoying her life and also how much these orphans were enjoying their life. They weren't doing this because they needed to, they were doing this because it was a life they chose.
Well, I mean, come on. They were doing it for food rations. They kinda needed to.
They kinda needed to, but they also could have just left the Tokyo. They could have just tried to make it into the real world and maybe find a shelter or possibly even a new family, but they wanted to stay in Tokyo because it's where they felt like they belonged, and that's how Uta is. She felt like she belonged with this group. She didn't feel like she wanted to be a space bubble anymore. And part of that was because of her feelings for Hibiki, but also it was just part of her wanting to figure out her own life. Even if that meant her life would be pretty short. And that is ultimately the choice the mermaid made as well. Which is why she turned to sea foam, which is also bubbles. Yeah. Not
no
so subtle.
Way.
Not so subtle, yeah. So yeah. Not a very subtle movie.
No, it's not.
But yeah, I really like Uta as a character. I liked the fact that they turned Tokyo into this massive playground in a post-apocalyptic setting. I like the idea of the gravity-defying bubbles. I like the character designs. I love the music.
Okay, but real talk, like if that were to actually happen, you know that parkour sports would become a real thing. Like,
yeah.
Like this isn't a real stretch of the imagination. If there was an area in the world that had like weird wonky gravity, you bet your ass people are gonna go there and make a sport of it.
Yeah. I even really liked the very open interpretation ending of this movie, talking about the whole idea of life coming together and then scattering, and even the imagery of spirals and how that is the shape of life. This stuff is left really vague, and it doesn't really try to oversell you on this idea. It just kind of leaves you with a what do you think about this, the same way that many scientists still kind of have an open-minded feeling about that whole concept themselves. Like, we really are a pattern-seeking species. We see shapes in the stars, we see patterns throughout history, we see things repeating themselves. We see faces.
I was gonna say, there is a reason that we see faces in literally everything.
Yeah. It's mostly because of our survival instincts that we inherited from our ancestors, but it means that we see ourselves in the entire universe consistently.
And that's why humans will bond with literally everything.
Including a bubble waifu.
Including a bubble waifu.
We could fall in love with a bubble at any minute, okay?
Bond with the bubble.
Yeah. Bubble buddy all over again.
Oh boy.
But yeah, like, how many times have you guys gone onto social media and seeing, like, the one friend you had in high school reshare that meme of, like, the picture of the eyeball up close next to the picture of a galaxy and be like, they're literally the same image.
Oh my.
We are a pattern-seeking species, and the whole ending of this movie really drove that point of, like, is this genuinely a cycle of the universe that we are destined to always repeat and see over and over again? Or is this just us seeing what we want to see in just a strange phenomenon that is completely random and had no significant meaning whatsoever? And I love that the ending is completely open-ended like that. I thought it was great. I love weird sci-fi stuff like that. I love when we get to see characters really explore these ideas and kind of come to their own conclusions. And I really like when these characters also don't tell us their own personal thoughts on it, but let us form our own opinions as an audience. I think it's great. It's one of the reasons I'm such a nerd to begin with. And I think it's the one thing this movie did really well, and I also think it's the reason I really love Eve music videos to begin with, is every music video that they've ever done has some kind of theme or underlying message that you could either dig and discover, or you can just be like, ooh, pretty anime music video. I like this. Why is there a destroyed city in every single one of Eve's music videos? Who knows? It's just what they do. Why is there a weird one-eyed creature in every single one of their music videos? It's just their thing, right?
It's a message from the future.
Symbolism or just them being weird? Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I liked this movie. Do I think it's the best movie out there? No. Would I think that it's something I would recommend over movies like Jujutsu Kaisen Zero or Your Name or A Silent Voice? Probably not.
Also no.
Is it the thing I'm recommending the most this season? Maybe, actually. It's up there. I really genuinely think that. I think while I'm enjoying a lot of anime this season, there's nothing that's really made me completely wowed until I watched this movie. And this is the first time I've had a lot of thoughts about something I've watched this season. Which is why I feel like I can't really do an entire episode talking about almost any anime we've watched this season. They're not bad, but they're not something that I really want to talk to my friends about that I think are absolutely must watches, or something that I feel like I'm going to be recommending the diamond in the rough for them. So I am really happy that my friend told me that she was enjoying Bubble and was wondering if I had already done a podcast episode about it, because I really wanted to. And I like it. And I also really like Eve, so, and Uta.
Eve just really sold this movie for you, didn't it?
It really is an Eve music video.
There we go.
So, yeah, go watch this exposition dump of a dumpster fire movie that will teach you about the meaning of life and why you should find love in the weirdest places.
I'm not touching that one.
Maybe it's just teaching weebs that they need to go shower. Soap is your friend.
Soap is your friend. Touch the bubble.
Touch the bubble. Embrace the bubbles.
Embrace the bubble.
Go yeah. Do parkour.
Yeah. Don't lose your leg during parkour.
It's true. Because that will become plot relevant later when you meet a kid that also had an incident in the same place where you lost your leg.
Right? So, I didn't enjoy the movie as much as you probably did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it probably was because, as you said, the opening sequence just kind of, like, got me set off on the wrong foot. You know, it kind of... it kind of set a tone that I wasn't expecting for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And then it basically led right into an, you know, exposition dump, and it kind of just lost me and wasn't quite able to bring me back.
Yeah.
So there's that. Other than that, probably my biggest issue with the movie was, like, there were just, like, several instances, you know, like, one towards the finale, you know, where I think it's Hibiki, he's like, oh yeah, the red bubbles are really dangerous, don't let them touch you, and then proceeds to bounce off of 17 red bubbles simultaneously.
Well, they weren't really, like toxic to touch, it's just that in the scene prior to that, the red bubbles, like, ganged him and, like, threw him across the ocean. So he was just like, they're just mean. Yeah, they're mean bubbles.
But that's what I'm saying. He's like, oh, yeah, guys, don't touch the red bubbles. Don't let them touch you. And then he just, like, bounces off of 17 in a row.
Parkour off your enemies.
It's no big deal. Like, what the fuck, dude?
Parkour off your red bubble bullies. And it really didn't bother me too much, because I think I kind of got that he was just like, those red bubbles are mean. You have to outsmart them. And I think he didn't really trust his teammates to be smart enough to know how to bounce off them properly. He's kind of conceited.
What a dick.
He is kind of a dick. But, yeah, I don't know. I still really like this movie. I also didn't really get to talk about the fact that the composer for the music of this movie was none other than the man himself, Sawano. Hiroyuki Sawano did the music for this, and I knew he did the music for this, like, from the opening sequence, because they, like, show off his name in really big letters, like, during the opening sequence. They're like, music done by Hiroyuki Sawano. And I'm like, oh, snap, he did this movie? If it weren't for that opening sequence telling me that, I actually probably wouldn't have realized this was him. Because it's so different from, like, the Promares and Kill la Kills and Attack on Titan soundtracks that I'm used to hearing from him. There's no real major, like, beat drop in this music. It really is just more almost whale noise music. And it's a lot more calming, and it really is more based off of the Little Mermaid vocals that are so iconic with the character. And it's very, very different than what I'm used to from him, and it's neat to see him branch off. I think once you know he did the music for this movie, you can hear that signature sound, but if you're not aware of it, you would be very surprised to find out it's the same person.
The other thing that drove me nuts, that stupid song, the do-do-do-do, you know, like... Yeah. I was sitting here, I was like, I've heard that song before, where the fuck did that come from? And I was sitting here thinking, and I realized, I think it was, what was it, Encounters of the Third Kind, where they, like, show up on the mountain and they just play those same four notes until the kids get up to the top of the mountain and play those same four notes.
Do you know where I recognize the song from?
Where?
The fucking Futurama. This is the episode that's making fun of that is the one with the car alarm from the last season.
Oh my god, that just, so yeah, that drove me nuts.
That's literally those four notes.
I was like, where the fuck, where did you rip this off from?
It's literally fucking Futurama where they're trying to figure out where the four notes are coming from, and it was a car alarm.
Yeah.
So yeah, this movie, like I said, it's not perfect by any standards, but it was a much better watch than Fireworks.
Grab a drink and go have fun, guys.
Yeah, and it's on Netflix, so it's not like you have to go pay for movie theater prices. And I think if you're somebody that just really enjoys a visual and musical sensation, like, you just like good anime music and you just like good animation, I think you'll enjoy this film a lot. If you hate bad character dialogue, it might not be the movie for you, because it has a lot of that. Also, why does Makoto keep putting her boobs on her desk whenever she's working?
Where do you put your boobs when you're working?
They sit on my chest where they belong. I don't lean on my desk to a point where my chest is sitting on the desk.
Well, clearly, you need to get yourself a boob desk.
I feel like that would cause...
You just pull over the boob desk, rest them on top, and then, you know, it's carrying the weight of your tits.
I feel like that would cause so many back pain, like lower back pain, to be sitting where my butt is on the chair, but my chest is on the desk. That just seems so uncomfortable and impractical. Literally, your chest is holding your chest, girl. Like, fucking relax.
Yeah.
Tell me you've never seen a woman sit in a chair without telling me you've never seen a woman sit in a chair.
Women don't exist.
That's true. And with that, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up this review.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.